So Steve and Mirabai are going to join me. As you might have noticed, we are talking about Hinduism today. We are still in our series, Many Paths to the One. Actually, we're about midway through. And Steve and Mirabai have Hinduism in their path. Or they are on the path of Hinduism. I'm not sure how I want to say that. Yeah. There you go, in addition to unity. So I know you were already practicing Hinduism when you found unity, and there's kind of an interesting serendipity with how you came into unity. So would you share with us how you found unity?
Sure. We had been studying Hinduism and Eastern philosophy in general through yoga, and we were having a satsang, which is just like what we're having here, music and a message. At our home with the mother aspect of God, Guru Mataji, because her husband, Sant Keshavadas, had transcended. And we invited Ramajyoti Vernon, who founded the Internet
Yoga Journal.
And from that, she came and she heard mother give the message. And then, as usual, we would sing a few songs. And so after we were done,
Rama came up to us and she said, first of all, it's good to see you after 25 years, because we had first met her when we met Sant Keshavadas, who was the founder of the Temple of Cosmic Religion, and she was one of his students. So 25 years later, she came up and heard us sing, and she said, your music is wonderful and it'd be great for Unity of Walnut Creek. And my husband, Reverend Max Lafser, is the minister there.
And the rest is history.
So Mirabai was telling me this a couple of days ago, and I thought, well, that is serendipity, because Max, some of you remember Max, who served here for 5 years, is actually retiring today. So he's just most recently at Unity of Tyler, Texas. And today's the celebration, and there's a picture of Rama, who brought you to Unity, his wife, and a great yoga practitioner and leader, and Max. So we're in celebration of them as well, and blessing them on their next leg of their journey. So you just mentioned a few names of teachers, and we do have some slides of some of your teachers. So maybe we can put up the next slide and see who we have. It'll be a surprise.
So we were taking voice lessons, Steve and I, from a wonderful voice teacher. And she said, you know, you should do some muscle exercises for your back to stand up straight. And she said, there's a great yoga pose called the shoulder stand. So we were practicing that, and I wanted to make sure I was doing it right. So a friend of ours said, you know, there's a yoga center, Shivananda Yoga Center, up on 9th Avenue? Yeah, 9th Avenue. We were just two blocks away. And so we had been reading Autobiography of a Yogi before that by Paramahansa Yogananda. And so when I walked in, they were talking about his book. And I thought, wow, what a coincidence, you know, because things happen for a reason. So I stayed and listened to the talk, and then I got some instruction.
So we started going to the Shivananda Yoga Center in San Francisco on a regular basis. In fact, this is back in the day. And so we would get up at like 0:30, and we would walk three blocks to the Shivananda Yoga Center, and we would do silent meditation, and then chanting of Sanskrit mantras, and then the yoga poses, the asanas, and then we would leave and go to work.
Unbelievable.
Some devotion. But,
yeah, and Swami Vishnu Devananda, whenever he met you, he would give you a spiritual name if that was what you would like to have. And so I really wanted to have a spiritual name, somebody to emulate my life by. But usually he'd say, so what's your name? But he didn't do that with me. He just said, wait, I'm going to meditate. And he meditated and he said, you Mirabai. And I didn't know who that was at that point, and found out she was a singing saint ever since she was a child. And I have written poetry and songs since I was a young child, so I just thought that was very auspicious. He has a spiritual name, too. He's Krishna Das.
Ah. Right, which means devotee of Krishna. Ah.
And we decided to stick with Swami Vishnu for a while, and he was not a great singer, so he said, you know, he said, I have to bring some people in. So first he brought in Swami Nada Brahmananda, which means the bliss of the sound of God. Mm. And he would play on his swar mandala, just something he invented. And he would sing, and he would sing through the chakras. And Stanford University did a whole study on him in an airtight room with things on his back and his chakras. And he could sing, and he could play tablas while looking at a picture of Master Shivananda, who was his teacher. And they did it for 40 minutes. And you can look it up. It's actually a true study. And then he also brought in Sant Keshavadas, which should be on the next slide. Yeah, that is, he is the most incredible person. And we kind of emulated our family like him, because him and his wife, who is now in charge in the lineage.
She's the next slide.
She's the next slide. And Rama Mata, or Guru Mataji, or mother. And that's her son, Sham. And
her younger son.
Yeah.
She has two sons and a daughter.
Yep. And they carry on the tradition since Sant Keshavadas passed on.
So what we learned from Sant Keshavadas is he founded the Temple of Cosmic Religion, which in many ways is very close to unity, because the logo for the Temple of Cosmic Religion included the symbols for all the world religions, just as you sometimes see in various New Thought centers. And he taught that the paths are many, but the truth is one.
Right, and the world is one family. Mm. And he would do discourses from all the different religions and speak about it in the most incredible way, and he would chant.
Right, he would talk for a while, and then he would burst into song, and he would accompany himself on the harmonium. And, he wrote literally thousands of devotional songs in praise of God in Sanskrit, and some of them in English, too. He would sing, and then he would ask the congregants to sing along, and then he would continue with his discourse.
And the chantings were like affirmations of, I love you, God, or I am God, or whatever they meant. And it would invoke this in you, and you'd feel the energy rising, and it was just the most incredible experience, which is what all Indian music, traditional Indian music is about. It's about realizing your oneness with God. And so that was the whole point of the satsangs and the messages, to realize your oneness.
Wow. So there's a lot, I hear a lot of similarity, so it makes a lot of sense that your paths, that you can both practice these Hindu practices and your unity practices, and that they really merge. Just as you said, the songs are like affirmations. There's kind of a natural bend toward the openness and inclusivity. I don't know that we can claim the kind of knowledge of all the different religions, mm-hmm. but we certainly can say we are welcoming. And then the other one that always really strikes me is the idea of innate divinity, our second principle in unity. And, you know, the Fillmores, our co-founders, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, were said to have studied the Eastern religions when they were forming what unity is. And I never got explicit detail on that, but it always made sense to me that Hinduism must have been key to that. Of course, Hinduism is sort of the mother of many religions anyway, about 6,000 years old. But one of the key tenets being this idea of that the divine is within us. And this is a real distinguishing factor for us in New Thought from many other branches of under the larger umbrella of Christianity anyway. So I really think that's an important piece that feels like it's a shared process or a shared belief system, shared principle.
And also many people think that they celebrate many different gods, but really they celebrate one God, the one God that's in all of us. And that God just incarnated many different times, in many different names, in many different religions. And so that was what they worship, different aspects of God. But it's really the source. Because God is infinite. You are infinity, right? And so it's hard to concentrate on infinity. So by focusing your devotion on one aspect that you feel close to, or your mind can stay with, or something that's in your heart that you need, that really helps you to focus your mind and develop that.
For example, Ganesha, for whom we saw the image earlier, as Kauri said, is known to be the remover of obstacles, among other things. And so, you know, if that particular personality trait of the divine is something that resonates with you or something that you feel you need more of, then you might focus on Ganesha in your meditation.
Or you might focus on Jesus, because that was the same thing to Sant Keshavadas. He'd say, Christ consciousness, that's what we're all setting for. Just we're trying to become like Christ. He said, and Christ said, and this you shall do also and more. So that was the philosophy, so we're all one.
The other thing that you spoke of is that you practice yoga, and that in the Western mind conjures up a different image than what Hinduism really means by yoga. So can you say a little bit about what yoga is?
Yes, so it's a multifaceted practice, and the yoga postures are asanas. That's one aspect of it. It's a very important aspect of it. And that particular part of it is to enable you to purify the body so that you can reach the point where you will be able to realize your oneness with God. Now, other aspects of yoga would be meditation, and that helps you to purify the mind and, you know, again, make yourself ready for oneness with God. And then...
Yeah, I was just going to say, and another part of yoga is the pranayama, or the breathing exercises, because that balances all of your energies, and you feel this calmness come over you, and it's all in preparation for meditation. You do the postures so your body doesn't ache, and you do the pranayama so that your body is purified and ready and open, and you go into your heart that way. So I thought, if you don't mind, that I would do...
let's just do the first one. Maybe.
Okay, we'll do something called alternate nostril breathing. This one helps you to balance the yin and the yang in your body and purify yourself and into the harmonious state. It's a... You wanted to explain it, and I'll do it.
Okay, so what you do is you close off one nostril. We're going to start off by closing off the right nostril. And then I'm just going to give you the explanation, then we'll actually do it. So then you breathe in through the left nostril, and then you hold. And then you breathe out through the right, and then you breathe in through the right, and then you hold, close both, and then you breathe out through the left. Okay, so that's one round of alternate nostril breathing.
That is a 4-2-1.
Oh, yeah, the ratio is... You breathe in for the count of 4, and you hold for 16, and then you breathe out for 8. And, you know, whatever speed is comfortable for you as you begin the practice. So we're going to do it...
1-4-2 ratio.
We're not going to hold for too long.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. We don't want to end turning blue.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so... Okay, close your right nostril with your thumb and breathe in. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now close and hold. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. And breathe out through the right. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Breathe in through the right. 2, 3, 4. Now hold. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and out through the left. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So that's one round of alternate nostril breathing, and you can do that for however many times you feel comfortable, and Mirabai will describe the benefits of this practice.
Yeah, when you do that, it just makes your brain waves go into a higher state of consciousness, and it really helps you to meditate because you feel the calm and the peace, and your body gets more in tuned. It's sort of like the stones that we wear. They all bring a certain energy. So this brings the energy into your body into complete harmony. It purifies your cells. It helps you with your health. It has many benefits.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing with us and giving us a takeaway practice. That was really wonderful.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know we are all very grateful that Rama introduced Heart Dream to Unity, aren't we? So there are four basic yogas, four basic practices and ideas of yoga. And often we have a tendency, just like Carl Jung took from the four yogas to create some of the personality types and the ideas of the archetypes, but we won't get into that today. So the four yogas, though, in Hinduism, are a little bit of what you just experienced and we talked about, and that, you know, we experienced through the music, really, is the bhakti yoga is a devotional practice. And so the bhakti would love to, you know, loves to chant, to pray, to, it's for the love of God. It's the worship of God. It's the love of God. It's the opening Ganesha chant would be like a very bhakti kind of practice. And so the bhakti, the one who practices bhakti yoga, one way that it's said, there's a Hindu saying that says, I want to taste the sugar, but I don't want to be the sugar. And so for the bhakti, it's like the allness of God, right? The essence of God, that, but not so much of the focus of the innate divinity, more in the worship of God. So we all kind of have these pieces and parts, just like anything else, where we might harmonize the paths, but we'll find one that's really like, oh, that's our leaning, you know? And so the second one might be one that a lot of us can identify with in the West, is the idea of karma yoga. Karma yoga is action. And so that's a very Western, right? We're always in action. It's about work and service and doing, basically. And so you can do a lot of work and service and action and not have it have that spiritual weight, right? But in karma yoga, it does have that spiritual weight. It does have that intentionality. And so your actions, your service, all have that kind of sense of, this is why I'm doing it, right? That it's about, it's always about self-realization. That's always all the yoga paths seem to be bringing us to that ideal. But essentially, karma yoga then is the action, the movement. The key for karma yoga, the key thing that we want to learn is to act without attachment. That's a tough one, right? And so when we do something that, you know, is less desirable, a little bit easier for us to not have attachment to that. But when we have attachment to what we're creating and what we're doing, and we want it to turn out a certain way, and we're doing that kind of grasping, that's what we want to learn not to do in karma yoga, to act for the giving over to spirit, to act for the love of service, to act, you know, from that basis. So meditation can be a real balancer for karma yoga practitioners. The third one is Raja Yoga, and this one is really geared very well to the one who has sort of an experimental kind of bend, somebody who wants to meditate as a practice of seeing what happens, basically. So it can be very disciplined, a lot of self-control. When Charles Fillmore first was introduced to some of the ideas of learning about the divinity within, he said himself that he took kind of a cold and calculated approach. You know, he's like, he was very skeptical. He was a businessman. He's like, okay, well, I'll just sit down and I'll be in meditation for, you know, and I'll just see what happens. And so he just kept his experiment up time after time after time until he started to feel and experience and have a sense of that presence. So if you have that kind of more skeptical or experimental kind of scientific mind, that Raja Yoga practice that has real discipline in it may really appeal to you. And then the last one is Jnana Yoga, which is more about knowledge, more the philosopher, the one who likes to reflect, to inquire within. So Jnana Yoga has that kind of bend to it. And I'm just going to go ahead and invite Kausi up right now, because that's the one that she identifies the most with, and I'd rather hear from her than have you hear about it from me. The real deal, right? Namaste. So thank you again for being with us, Kausi, and just sharing a little bit of your path with us. I noticed when we were talking your just deep passion for God, for your practice, for your path. I was really moved by that. I'm moved by that again as I speak of it. Yeah, and just witnessing that, you know. It gives me so much hope for the world to meet people like Kausi. I think that's why I'm feeling so much. your sense of passion and your commitment to your practice and your commitment, one of the things I read about on Jnana Yoga is that's part of it, is to have a real longing, a real clear longing and desire to know God, to know yourself as God. Mm-hmm. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
My teacher, Ramana Maharshi, he has given the example of, you will see God when you really desire to see God, like a person you're holding a person down in water, underwater, and how desperately they want to breathe air. If you want to see God that desperately, you will see. Okay. Mm.
And that's what you have.
I would like to. I don't know how serious it is, but I would like to.
Well, we won't try the experiment, but we do hear your intention. And we do have a picture of Ramana Maharshi, who you just mentioned as your teacher.
Right, yeah, he is my teacher. And, well, he had passed on before I was born, but we believe in the living spirit of...
We believe in the living, thank you.
Like it's right at your mouth, there you go.
He guides, even though he is not physically around.
What's the essence, would you say, of his teachings the practice?
If you seriously want to pursue a spiritual life, what you want to do is to go within and find out who you really are. So who am I is something that he, I hate to use the word popularized because he didn't care to popularize anything or blame anything, but he taught about who am I, or, you know, you go in and you ask yourself, who am I, and then wait for the answer, and then you will be revealed. Reality or like truth or the divinity or the sacred will shine within. As you do it more and more, you will see reality. You will get to know reality.
So it's really kind of a self-inquiry process of meditation.
It is. It is very much, yes.
Yeah. And then you also have other aspects of your practice. Is that true?
Yeah.
Or is that your primary?
The four yogas, it's difficult to be, like one of them can be dominant, but the others will also be present. It's difficult to isolate one and you're that kind of practicing that yoga. So we all do action. So we're all beginning our budding karma yogis in a way. You know, we may not be offering the fruit of the action to God yet, but we all are doing karma. Same thing with bhakti. You know, there are times when you really thinking unity, but there are times when you see the other because you're rushing to help them or you're rushing or whatever. You know, you see them as the other. And Raja, of course, we are all into meditation. We know that that's helps very much in continuing with the spiritual path. And then Jnana Yoga, I think we have that in us already. We all want to know God. Okay, so right there is the beginning of the seed of Jnana Yoga. Okay. So the yogas are very difficult to isolate, you know, and stay by itself. Mm.
What do you imagine, so the longing to know God, you know, what do you imagine that is like? So what is it like to be completely self-realized or completely liberated, or you have this passion to know, so you have a clear drive for it. What do you imagine that's experience will be?
Without experiencing, it is hard to explain it. So I have not, I may have had glimpses of it here and there, but we all have. We all have had glimpses, we just don't know that. There are times when, you know, like you go to a new place, you're like suddenly taken over with the beauty. You go to, you're on vacation, you know, you're by the ocean side or you go into the garden or something. And you're completely taken aback with the beauty of it, and you don't, you're not thinking about who you are or, you know, like your likes and dislikes and all that. You like, you completely don't even remember yourself. That at that time, your separate self as an ego does not exist at that time, or it kind of forgot, and you were one with what you were seeing around you. So it's not a totally alien concept. It we all do that. But the goal, if you want to pursue the spiritual path, is to be in that state or to not exist as a separate human being or as an individual human being. There is no core I. It's very difficult to imagine because it goes beyond the mind. Therefore, you cannot intellectualize it, and you can, but it may be good for writing a thesis on something in theology thesis. But you have to experience it. Like you were talking about sugar, you know, like tasting sugar, right? Mm-hmm. You got to taste the sugar to know how sweet it is, you know. So not just how sweet it is, what it tastes like. Mm-hmm. So I'm in no way qualified to say what it is, but and the reason it is difficult to explain it also, when you experienced it, you were not there. So you come back and you want to explain it, it's not the same thing anymore. So so it is very difficult to explain. It's beyond words. I mean, all the people who have had a taste of it, but you who kind of had to come back and explain it for the sake of people like, you know, me and others, they say how it is beyond words. It cannot be described. You know, it's way above the grasp of mind. And so, but it can be known. It can be known. You can. That is why it is a path of knowledge. It can be known, not through any means that your mind is already familiar with. None of the tools of the mind work. You don't have to be, you know, educationally at a certain level to know that. You know, anybody. I mean, there are so many stories of people who never even, you know, went to school or anything who have realized the self. So self-realization is the goal, okay? God realization, you know. So just from the description of other teachers or people who have had a glimpse of it, who have come back and explained or helping or guiding, it is a state of bliss. It is a state of happiness or joy that is continuous. So the glimpses that we have had is like a drop, not even a drop in the ocean, but it is an ocean of bliss. And we all have a space in our being, okay? Or not, space is not the right word. There are no right words, so bear with me. However, I'm trying to get an idea across with the incorrect words. So, you know, we are innately divine, you know, like you already said. And in that place, that is the place of bliss. That is the place of total peace, no matter what kind of storm is blowing in your life. There is that place where it is completely at peace. No matter what somebody is blaming you for, there is that place which is completely in confidence with it, because it's in touch with God, okay? Or it is a drop of God. So anything, I mean, like it's that place that you want to reach and abide there. Ramana Maharshi's teaching is abide in the self. I mean, mm-hmm. I talked about who am I, but this is also the other thing, abide in the self. Mm-hmm. So if that is your practice, few minutes a day, just let the outside world, let the oceans, waves of the ocean be tossing around, who cares? Get to the deep. And you abide in yourself, okay, where you are in connection. I mean, like your Atman, the center of your Atman, you're in touch with God. A few minutes a day, you will see wonders happen in your lives.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I think the inspiration for today for all of us is to have some, you know, rediscovering of our intent. What is our intent on this spiritual journey? What is our desire? And then what is our commitment? What practices will we recommit to or commit going forward, so we can come a little deeper into that understanding, this realization of self that Hinduism is all about. And we've seen some of the nice connections with unity, thanks to our friends illuminating it today. So let's close out with an affirmation, just helping us really ground in that idea of recommitting to our path and our practices.
Kristen, can I add? I wanted to mention something. I forgot to mention about the Ganesha thing. You all know the mantra Om, like the syllable Om. Ganesha, if you look at the shape and the trunk and all that, he is the personification of Om. Mm. Okay. So it's called Pranava Mantra. The Om is called Pranava Mantra. And so he is Pranavam.
Okay. So can I ask you, after we speak our affirmation, would you be willing to lead us in an Om?
Sure.
Okay. Let's speak our affirmation and then we'll close out with Om. Together. I recommit to my path and practices. I realize my true self.